KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm Ross Reynolds. One out of every six people in the United States traces their family roots to Spanish-speaking countries. Ray Suarez tells the history of 50 million Latinos in the U.S. and makes the case that if you're not Latino, it's your history, too. Ray Suarez, senior correspondent for the PBS NewsHour. He hosted NPR's Talk of the Nation from 1993 to 99. He's reported from London and Rome, been Los Angeles correspondent for CNN. His previous books include The Old Neighborhood and The Holy Vote. The new book coming out this September is called Latino Americans. And thank you so much for stopping by.
Great to be here, Ross.
Part of your goal with this new book is to show how Latino history in the U.S. is the history of all of us. Do you think it gets short shrift in the history that we know?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, since the 60s, when various groups that were locked out of the mainstream narrative of American history stepped up and said, hey, we've got a story too, instead of it being incorporated into that main narrative, these offshoots were allowed to develop. So that if you go to a college campus in many places in the country, not all, don't get insulted and call up, but if you go to a black history class, most of the kids, if not all of the kids, are going to be black. If you go to a women's history class, most of the students in the class, if not all, are going to be women. And similarly, whether in a high school or on a college campus, if you go into a Latin American history class, most of the kids in the class are going to be Latino. And so we learn these balkanized histories, and it doesn't change what we take as the accepted mainstream narrative of American history, and every side loses in that.
Make your case. Give us an example of a big chunk of history of Latino Americans that hasn't made it into mainstream history that we should know about.
Well, 40% of what is now the United States was part of the Spanish Empire, and that may be well appreciated in some places, maybe El Paso, Texas, Santa Fe, New Mexico. But we think of American history as basically an English thing that starts out in a thin strip of Atlantic coast colonies and then just hurls itself across a continent as if nobody was there, as if English-speaking people were the only game in town and the only interested empire, when in fact North America was home to contending empires, all throwing out their elbows and all struggling for dominance. And the first language, European language spoken in North America was Spanish, not English. Whether you're talking about Los Angeles or San Antonio or San Francisco, many of the largest cities in the United States, the biggest metropolitan areas, were founded by Spanish-speaking people, given their shape, given their history by Spanish-speaking people. We've had a very difficult history, and we ignore it instead of talking about it.
Not to mention San Juan Island.
Not to mention, well, yes, that finger comes all the way up here, and one of the reasons the Spanish sent and the Mexicans sent up pioneer columns out of Mexico to places like San Francisco and San Diego was to solidify this part of the country, because the Russians were coming down from Alaska and the British were coming west from Canada. And this was a meeting place of empires right here in Washington State.
Well, the Spanish Empire was substantial. Why aren't we all speaking Spanish in this country? Why did it become an English-dominated country? Why didn't the Spanish win?
The Spanish became so wealthy from pillaging the natural wealth of the New World that their empire became decadent. They took out tons of silver and gold and used it to finance continental wars back in Europe, jousting for domination back in the Old World, instead of solidifying their holdings in the New World in a way that would make them permanent and longitudinal. So the Spanish culture is on deposit forever here. But Spain, alas, was gone by 1821.
Yes, you do recognize that voice. Ray Suarez is with us. He's talking about his forthcoming book called Latino Americans. You write that part of your goal in this new book is to surprise the reader. And I'm wondering, the book is not out yet, but I'm sure you've had readers of it. What are some of the things that surprise people when they read it?
Well, you know, I write a lot about Puerto Rico and how Puerto Rico came to be part of the United States. And this is, to this day, a not very well understood thing. People don't realize what Puerto Rico is, who Puerto Ricans are. Are they citizens? Are they citizens of another place? How do they get here? And in the opening of the book, I say, I'm not doing my job if at least once every couple of pages you don't say out loud, I didn't know that. And there are all these wonderful, interesting stories about communities and the flow from different places in the world, the Dominican Republic, from Puerto Rico, from Mexico, that give us an insight not only into the particular stories of Latinos, but the world events, the Cold War, the Central American Civil Wars that sent so many people north to save their own lives. This all was shaped by things that were going on around the world, the way goods and people move from place to place, the way money and influence and militaries and empires move from place to place. It just is a striking story and a very American story. And that's what I want to leave people with, the idea that this is not some story about another place that ends up having some impact here, but a story very much rooted in the United States.
Well, I'll tell you a story that surprised me. The only successful revolution by Native people against European colonialists anywhere in the New World kept the Spanish out of New Mexico. I did not know that story.
They were chased out of New Mexico for years. An Indian shaman named Pope led a network of communities throughout central New Mexico. They spoke slightly different languages. They lived a far distance from each other at a time before the wheel and before roads. He knit together this network of settlements, and they went to war on the Spanish and kicked them out of what's now New Mexico for about 6 years. And Pope today is in Statuary Hall in the U.S. Capitol. It's an interesting thing about history that eventually passions cool to the point where you can put this revolutionary leader's statue in the U.S. Capitol, even though what he was about was making war on the white man.
You're obviously very knowledgeable about this before you began to research this book. But did you come across things, Ray Suarez, that surprised you about Latino history you had no idea?
All the time. You know, after the United States takes over Puerto Rico as part of the Spanish-American War, it was totally an accident. Nobody was thinking about Puerto Rico. No one was thinking about what to do with it, whether they wanted it or not. But a scared Congress passes a law in the mid-1890s that says, if the Spanish leave Cuba, we are not going to annex Cuba. It's called the Platt Amendment. So the United States gets Puerto Rico and never really thinks about, well, is this a place that's separate from the United States? Is it a place that's part of the United States? We want the stuff that they grow, coffee and bananas, but do we want the people? And what are the people? Are the people American citizens? Are they not? A woman arrives in New York Harbor in 1901, shortly after Puerto Rico is taken in the Spanish-American War. She's coming there to meet her fiancé. Immigration officials board the boat. She says, well, I'm going over to New Jersey. I'm meeting my fiancé. We're going to get married. And they said, well, you can't just go to New Jersey. You're an immigrant. You have to go to Ellis Island and be processed like people from Ireland or Germany or Romania. And she says, but I just left San Juan where the American flag flies over the fort and over the port. How could I be an immigrant? And they take her to Ellis Island and they hold her there. And she is so wound up about this that she ends up going to the Supreme Court of the United States. They hear her case in 1903. By then, she's married, so she's legally resident already. But the principle was so important to Isabel Gonzalez that she is the plaintiff in a landmark case that solidifies the right of Puerto Ricans as people living under the American flag to move to the United States. I had no idea this woman existed. I had no idea her court case existed. It was fascinating. Reading the original opinions, reading the pleadings and the briefs, great stuff.
Ray Suarez has taken the task of no less than documenting the one out of every six people in the U.S. who trace their family roots back to Spanish-speaking countries. The new book, Latino Americans, is coming out this September. Now, these are all separate countries with separate history, and sometimes Latino Americans might be seen as this large lump. There are points of division between all the Latino Americans, are there not?
Absolutely. And Latinos are conscious of that. But to a degree that when I was a kid, I wouldn't have thought possible, they are becoming one people in the United States. And that's an interesting thing. When I was younger, people would say, oh, don't say Hispanic, don't say Latino. I'm Mexican. I'm Cuban. I'm Dominican. I know what I am. I'm not this thing called Latinos. But now, when I talk to teenagers and young adults, frequently they'll say, oh, yeah, I'm Latino. You know, my parents came from El Salvador, but I go to school with Dominicans and I go to school with Puerto Ricans, and we are kind of the same thing. We run to the same crowds. We go to the same concerts. We listen to the same music. There is a native-born, native-developed Latino culture that's separate and distinct from what any of those kids would find in their parents' home countries. Hmm. And that's creating something that didn't exist before, which is one of the most interesting parts of all of this. In Miami, in Chicago, in New York, in places that used to be dominated by immigrants from one of the countries, just Mexico, yeah, in a place like Los Angeles, largely Cuban in a place like Miami, largely Puerto Rican in a place like New York. Now none of those are single country immigrant communities any longer. So this new thing, radio stations, a common culture on the street, is growing up in America that is different and distinct from what you would find in the home country.
And there are lots of signifiers of the impact. When I heard that the biggest radio station in Los Angeles was Spanish-speaking, when salsa started out selling ketchup, there are all these signifiers of what's going on. What are some of the, what do you think are the deeper ones that we might not see completely yet, but will come into view, say, in the next decade?
Talk to anybody in education about what's happening. In Chicago, one out of every two new students in the Chicago public schools comes from a home where one of the adults speaks Spanish. The evening news, it used to be just one, now it's in several markets. The late local news in Spanish gets higher ratings than the late local news in English. But when you do a second level of examination, some people, when they hear that, they say, oh, God, they're not learning English. This is terrible. In fact, most of the people who watch that Spanish language news also speak English, but they speak both languages, so they consume media in both languages, and they watch the Spanish news and the late local news. This is not a bad story that you have to get upset and you think, oh, we're maintaining non-English-speaking communities longitudinally and no one's going to learn English. That's one thing you don't have to worry about. No Latino parent in this country thinks their kids can get ahead without speaking English.
Some immigrant communities kind of keep the language long afterwards, and some it begins to go away, but there are really no current signs of Spanish-speaking going away. If anything, it appears to be getting stronger.
It's getting stronger, or at least maintaining, because the commercial world is ready to meet that community with products. Instead of a forced assimilation of the kind that you had, frankly, in the 20s and 30s, when European immigrants were being told, speak English and forget who you were and forget the places you fled and be us now. There was a different model of assimilation 100 years ago from what we see today. Latinos are saying to America, look, we can be fully who we are and fully American, and there's no contradiction in that. There's no paradox in that. It's my suspicion as Latino immigration levels off that Spanish, and all the research points to this, that by the time a Spanish speaker's grandchildren are running around, Spanish will start to decline in daily use, decline last in the home, but first out in the workplace, first in the stores, and so on. So Spanish will eventually have a profile that's similar to that of German over 100 years ago. It's just taking longer because the period of high Latino immigration is longer. So it's a community that's constantly renewing. But it's also constantly assimilating at the same time. You don't know whether someone you've come across who needed help and can't ask for instructions and doesn't understand English got here a year ago, 2 years ago, or 2 days ago.
There are millions of undocumented workers in the United States, and one big unkept promise of the first Obama administration was immigration reform. You're from the other Washington. You're closer to this than we are. What are the prospects of this in his second term?
Well, it looks like it's going to be introduced, for better or worse, in this year. A lot of people in the know on immigration reform say that it really has to be introduced during this calendar year to have any kind of shot. Otherwise, it'll get lost in the race for the 2014 midterm elections, and both the president and his supporters and supporters of comprehensive immigration reform don't want to see it become a battleground for the 2014 midterms. And by the second half of this second Obama administration, the president will already be considered a lame duck and may not have the juice to get it over the finish line. So a lot of people are putting all their hopes on this year.
So if it happens, it'll happen soon. And are there any signs that Republican opponents of immigration reform, or just opponents of immigration reform, have moderated their views given the outcome of the last election?
Well, when you talk to Republicans in Washington these days, they know that they have a problem. What they haven't figured out yet is what the problem is. They can read numbers as well as anybody in the game. They just don't know exactly what to do about it. Some of them think it's as simple as putting Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio out there and all will be well. But it's a little bit more complicated than that. The old assumption, Ronald Reagan's assumption, that Latinos are Republicans, they just don't know it yet, which he famously said in the late 80s, is turning out not to be true. A majority of Latinos now support same-sex marriage. A majority of Latinos support maintaining contraceptive supply as part of insurance policies that cover women's health. The old idea that Latinos were social conservatives, but ones that were highly dependent on public services, so they voted Democratic, it's not really as simple as that. And it's not going to be as simple as just putting on ads in Spanish and sending Marco Rubio out there. The Republicans have a deep problem. I think they realize it. I think they realize that the Sensenbrenner bill in 2006, which was going to turn all the illegal immigrants into felons, that galvanized the community in a way that they are still reaping the whirlwind from.
Ray Suarez, thank you so much for coming by. We really appreciate it.
Great to see you, Ross. Always great to be in Washington.
Ray Suarez, the new book is going to be called The Latino Americans, senior correspondent for the PBS NewsHour. David Hyde produces The Conversation with Arwin Nix. We get production help from Cameron Drews, Joshua McNichols, and Amber Cortez. Bernard Ouellette is our engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.